Lesson number 19, and that is going to begin in Ecclesiastes, the first chapter, if you'll turn there. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. And the title of this lesson is, Our Ultimate Goal is a Home in Heaven. So we're nearing the end of our study. What we have been studying for 18 lessons is how to handle this life with its trials and tribulations. And at the very, very beginning of our study throughout the entirety of this, we've emphasized the importance of perspective. So the importance of perspective indicates that this life is not all that there is. And so even if this life is very difficult, as we acknowledge a life to come that is far better, and we keep our focus on that life that is to come, that's going to help us handle the disappointments and difficulties, trials, tribulations that we suffer on this earth. So that's something we've alluded to. We've made some arguments from other passages, but this particular lesson is specifically about that. We want to address that point. And I thought that I would illustrate that by making note of a very well-known passage of Scripture, actually two in the book of Ecclesiastes. And it's a favorite study of mine. And to remember, remind you that when we look at the book of Ecclesiastes, the entirety of that book is established upon the premise of life that is lived without respect to God. And we understand that the life that we live as a child of God is one that is full of value. We understand that ultimately it is worth it to live for Him because of the reward that we'll receive. But consider how life would be if God were not in the picture, if there were no God. Then how difficult this life would be without that hope present. And that's what the book of Ecclesiastes is about. And I want you to notice in verses 12 through 14, the stated sentiment of a life that is lived without respect to God. In the text of verse 13, it mentions under heaven. So we're talking about that which is under heaven. All that's under consideration is this earth. I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under the sun, this burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. And I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Now it's an interesting thing because these bookend. Now the very first verse, well actually verse 2, as he introduces himself as the son of David, king of Jerusalem, he says, vanity of vanities, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So that's where it starts off. But what he means by that is what we just read in verses 13 and 14. When you consider every aspect of life that is lived under the sun, all the works that are done, all the efforts to search out value, to look for enjoyment or pleasure, he said it's all like grasping for the wind. I've used that that phrase to illustrate the point many times in sermons that I preached on this particular book. Because we all have done that as children. We stuck our hands out the window as the car's going down the road and we've sought to grab hold of the wind, and you simply cannot do it. There seems to be substance there, but in reality there is not. And that is where the majority of the world is. When we talk about the secular humanists of our day, they have rejected the concept of God, have claimed that the only value that there is the value that is received by the life that you live while you are here on this earth. It's a waste of time to try to look for something beyond the grave. You need to live your life as best you can and as fully as you can while you're here on this earth. That's the philosophy of the humanist. And so ultimately what they're trying to do is trying to find the value of this life. And some of them will go to books. Some of them will go to politics. Some of them will go to business. Some of them will go to family. Whatever they think is of the greatest value for them, they grasp for that. They strive to attain that. And in every single case, ultimately what they find themselves in at some point is facing death and judgment. And what they have to look back on are those things. But those things do them no good here at their last day. And that's what ultimately is the case for every individual who lives his life without respect to God. Now, I give you the opportunity to talk about this, but go over to chapter 12. Chapter 12, So the book ends. So he's talking about everything's vanity. Then he actually basically goes through the entirety of the book giving examples of such vanity. And then he gets down to chapter 12 and verse 13 to the end, the conclusion of the whole matter. He's tried to find a value in life lived under the sun. He's tried everything there is to try, and Solomon, he had a lot of experience with regard to these things. His conclusion in verse 13, "Fear God, keep His commandments. This is man's all." And I do like the New King James Version of it better than the King James, the whole duty of man. It's not merely his duty, it's the reason for his existence. This is man's all. Fear God, keep His commandments. Why? Because God will bring every work into judgment. God will bring every work into judgment. So this basically puts in a thumbnail what we're talking about. We have to understand that everything we do here on this earth is for a point in time to where we will stand before God and we will give an account with our eternal reward or punishment hanging in the balance. And the very reason for our existence, and by the way, most people don't get this, and I'm afraid that to one extent or another, we as Christians struggle with the same concept. Because we get so caught up with our families, we get so caught up with our business, we get so caught up with the day-to-day life that we live. But ultimately, our very reason for existence on this earth is to serve God so that we can be with Him in eternity. And if we miss that, we've missed it all. If we miss that, then the entire life that we have lived, no matter how successful we may have been, how much power we have gained, how much money we have made, how many kids we have had, it's all useless and without value. Now that is not to say that there is not intrinsic value in having a family or enjoyment out of that. It's saying that if that's what you live your life for, then in the end you've missed what life is about. It's a vain life that is lived, that it is not lived without, that is not lived with, that is lived without respect to God. Double negatives there. So a life that is lived without respect to God is a vain life. Okay? Comments, questions before we get into 1 Thessalonians? Yes, John.
Lesson before last, you had asked the question, do you know anyone who died while young? Almost answered that during the discussion, but I didn't think it really necessarily had application here. Truth is, it did. Back home, I worked with a gentleman. I'll call him a gentleman just because he wasn't much of a boy. He lived a very depraved life, and for as much as he could be and still be my fellow co-worker, he was a bit of a bully towards me because I was different. But that said, one day he didn't show up for work. We all knew that he drank and he didn't have a problem brawling. Most of us figured he did drugs, but without testing, none of us knew for sure. But even if there had been testing, we wouldn't have told about it. Well, one day he didn't show up for work. Next day, he didn't show up for work. Boss gave him the benefit of the doubt. Okay, things happen. Come to find out, after we were not showing up, news was reported to the rest of the crew that Mike had gone to one of the hotels with his cousin to shoot up drugs. He ended up taking the life of his cousin with a shotgun and taking his own head off with the same shotgun. And that happened during period in my life when I was questioning if I wanted to stay faithful. And I think it kind of ties into what we're talking about now, a life without God. And it caused me to think, is that the end? This is what the preacher tells me all the time. My parents tell me all the time, this is the end of wicked people. They have nothing to live for. They just have nothing to live for. Is this what I want? Yes, it did change my thinking. That young person dying, taking his own life. But it also made me think about it. I hadn't realized we were coming to this lesson at the time. But it made me realize the life without God is very, very sad. And it showed in his life.
Yeah. And that's why we were making that point. It's better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting. That's where the lessons are learned. And that's certainly a good point. Too many people don't learn that lesson. When they go through their lives, and then they get to the end of their lives, and they look back at what it was all about. You know, one of the things, I've mentioned this before, but the idea of an atheist, what is the end result of an atheist? Not that all would reach this end, but I do believe that the logical end of, as indicated in this text, of an atheist, a life that is lived without respect to God or belief in God, is nihilism. Because what you have, and this is expressed very clearly in the first few chapters of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1 especially, in that discussion of the cyclic nature of seasons and generations, is the fact that one generation rises up, one generation leaves this earth, the next one comes along and leaves the earth, the next one comes along and leaves the earth, you never remember the previous generations, nothing ever changes, the earth goes on as it has from the beginning. Nothing ever gets better. The utopia that people are always talking about getting to never comes. And the amazing thing to me is that in our generation, maybe the last 100 years, the idea is that science, that technology is going to create that utopia. You think about that, what we've accomplished, the amazing things that we've accomplished with technology, from the steam engine to flight to computers, all of this thing up, and look at where our society is right now. Look at how horrible the situation, circumstances is with regard to racial conflict, with regard to poverty, with regard to man's inhumanity to man. That never changes. So you get an individual at the end of his life and he says that this is all there is, then it wasn't worth it. And that's ultimately where people get to. It's why there is despair, why people take their own lives, why people turn to drugs and alcohol. All of those kinds of things happen. Because life is vain if it's not lived with a view to eternity. And man's purpose is to live his life with a view to eternity. As Christians, it's something that we need to know. And I think that we all do. I don't think anyone becomes a child of God, obeys the gospel, without having some understanding of that. But it is certainly something that we can forget, or at least become so distracted by the day-to-day mendacities of life that we don't keep our own prides. Paul warned about that in 2 Peter 1. Talked about individuals who have become spiritually myopic. They cannot see the end, their purpose in life. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, in these first 11 verses, which is our text for this particular lesson, the Apostle Paul calls upon them to be mindful of that. And I do want to read that. Don't know how much time we'll have, maybe 5 minutes to go into the discussion of the text, but I would like to begin reading in verse 1, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, and let's go down through verse 11. 1 Thessalonians 5, 1 through 11. And this apparently was a question, and I want you to think about this as well. At the birth of the Christian faith, you'll remember that 1 Thessalonians was the very first epistle that we studied with regard to Paul's writings. So this is the earliest letter that he wrote in his ministry. So the church hadn't been in existence for a long, long time. In fact, it was just now reaching the point where individuals who had become Christians, some of them had died. And so everyone had been talking about Christ coming again. They all been engaging in their Christian walk with this view that Christ is going to come and take us up with him in heaven. But all of a sudden people are dying. Christ isn't back yet. What's happening? What's the circumstances? And so they were asking questions of Paul concerning what will happen to them and what do we need to do? And so he answers these questions, and among them, he has an answer given in chapter 5. He says, "Concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you, for you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night." You want to ask when it's going to happen? We don't know when it's going to happen. "When they say peace and safety, sudden destruction comes upon them, as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. You're sons of light and sons of the day. We're not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night. Those who get drunk are drunk at night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and as a helmet, the hope of salvation. For God did not appoint us to wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, whether we wake or sleep. There's that idea of passing away. The word sleep there is a euphemism for death. So he died for us that whether we wake or sleep, we should live together with him. Therefore, comfort each other and edify one another, just as you're also doing. So basically, he's saying, keep working on it, just like you're working on it now. But understand this. This concept of preparation for the coming of the Lord, it's not found in trying to portend the seasons. The events of our particular day, what's happening over in Russia, whatever's happening in Israel, whatever's going on with regard to our economy, all of these things are indicative. Maybe the increase in hurricanes on any particular cycle, all of these are indications that the Lord is going to come soon. That's not true. The Apostle Paul says that's not the way you look at it. You don't try to figure out by looking at the sky when the Lord's going to come. It shouldn't come upon you unaware, because you are children of the day. You are awake. You are aware. You are sober-minded. You're diligently living for him, so that when that day comes, people are saying peace and safety, and sudden destruction comes, you're not caught up in that destruction because you were ready for his coming. That's how preparation is made. It's not made by looking at the sky. It's made by living a life that is in keeping with his calling, so that when he comes to collect you, you're ready. That's the type of life that we're to be living. So that's the text, and it indicates, number one, what our ultimate goal is and how to attain that goal. So there are some applications to be made, but I just want to read through the four bullet points with regard to the text, and we can get into the applications next week that tie off on, or that lead off from that. First of all, notice in verse 2 that statement, "You yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night." So we want to emphasize again, we do not know when Christ will come again. But as verse 3 and 4 indicates, we have the spiritual awareness, because we are of the day, to be prepared for his coming. Now, when you look at the actual aspects of this in verses 5 through 10, this idea of sobriety, the idea of faithfulness, the idea of being loving individuals, these are the kinds of things. And in fact, you can go throughout the entirety of the New Testament writings, especially the epistles, and you can look at examples as well as admonitions to righteous living and what is contained in righteous living. From James' statement that pure and undefiled religion before God the Father is visiting the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. From Galatians, the 6th chapter, with regard to the responsibilities we have to our brethren to bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the love of Christ. With regard to Hebrews, the 10th chapter, as we're called not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. Any number of examples you can go through where we have received these instructions as to how it is that we are to go about living our lives, so that if at any time, unexpectedly, Christ comes, because that's the way it's going to happen, that we who remain alive, we who remain awake, are ready for that day and will not be caught unawares. So that's the third point, and that is our preparation is accomplished by the type of life that we live. The final point in the text that we want to make note of is in verse 11, and that is the need that we have, as we understand these principles, the need that we have, therefore, to comfort each other and to edify each other, just as we are doing. And so we cannot, and we have emphasized this many times in our series up to this point, we cannot emphasize too much the importance that you play in helping me with regard to my Christian walk, so that I get through the trials and tribulations of life and eventually have that hope of heaven. Nor can we underestimate the importance that I play with regard to any one of you with regard to that same matter. We need to be edifying one another. We need to be encouraging one another. There is no stronger help that can be found as a Christian is seeking to serve his Lord and to get through difficult times in his life than that which is supplied by his brethren. And that was something they apparently early on were very actively doing, encouraging one another. And we know, as you remember in our study of the letter to the Thessalonians, that there was some persecution that they were suffering, some trials and tribulations, some poverty that was present among them. And so it was not an easy life that they had, but they helped each other. He said to continue to do that. Just as you're doing, continue to comfort each other and to edify one another. Okay? So that gets us through the text, and although since time is gone, we didn't have time to discuss it at all. I will open it up if anyone has anything they want to add or anything about the text of verses 1 through 11 of 1 Thessalonians 5 that you're not sure of or any confusion, anything you want to talk about. Well, we'll start there, get down into the applications. That means that we'll be getting through this lesson next week. What I'm thinking is that since we have the meeting next week, then we will have most probably this lesson and then two for the next, there'll be 3 weeks following. So we'll probably be finished with our study of this material on the 7th of December. That's probably going to be the last night that we'll have on this particular set of materials. By the way, we do have all of the things online. The audio is caught up as well for the class. So all of the audio for the classes is there as well if you want to catch up on anything. Appreciate very much everyone's kind attention.